Sister, woman, sister, can you still feel any pain? Or have they robbed you of your anger while putting Thorazina in your vein?
Hi, I'm Irene Yarrow, and this is Every Woman's Space.
Have the walls grown up so high that you can't even dream of leaving, and you've forgotten how to fly? Oh, sister, woman, sister.
This is a program by, for, and about women, all kinds of women, lesbian, bisexual, heterosexual, and celibate, well-known and not known, of different racial and ethnic groups, of all classes and all ages. This is a place for us to come together, to talk, to explore ourselves, and to grow. It's also a very special place for communication between me and my guests, who I have many of tonight, five guests, and between us and you out there. I take phone calls on many of the shows, and we'll be having phone calls later in this show, and I always ask you to write to me. And many of you do, and that's one of the greatest pleasures that I get from doing this show. Before I tell you what we're going to be talking about tonight, I have two things to say. First of all, welcome to Margot Adler, our new regular engineer. She'll be here every week. Second of all, before I tell you what the show is all about tonight, I want to say that the program that had been scheduled for tonight will be heard instead next week. So if you tuned in to hear about Project Chance, an innovative community-based education program for adult women, please listen next week when that show will be on. However, as long as you're here, stick around, because this is going to be interesting too. Tonight, Every Woman's Space is about the politics of fat. I had thought of doing a show like this for some time, and as I ask you all to write me and tell me what you'd like to hear on the air, several of you have written and said that you wish that you could hear a show about the problems of fat and the politics of fat. And I got a letter recently from a woman named Ro Rasmussen, who is sitting here in the studio tonight. And I want to point out that I feel very good about the fact that Every Woman's Space is growing to be more and more Every Woman's Space. And she's a listener and wrote me, and I really loved her idea. And here's the show, and she's here with us. She said a lot of things in the letter. She had attended a workshop called The Politics of Fat, and then she joined a CR group as a result of that. I would just like to read you some parts of her letter. Quote, "We met for two scary but exciting months before breaking for the summer. Fat CR is totally different from Overweight Anonymous or Weight Watches or diet clubs, etc. Some of the things we talked about were breasts. Some of the women had or had contemplated having breast reductions. Our feelings about our breasts, developing in puberty, how breasts can be a focus of fat feelings as well as symbols of being female. Fat and sexuality, eating our feelings instead of dealing with them. Fat as space and power and self-definition. Food and eating as ritual. There are also the issues of health as it relates to overweight, eating as pleasure, and the fascism of physical standardization. We'll be dealing with some of those issues tonight. I don't think there's any question that overweight is a woman's issue. In our struggle to value instead of devalue ourselves and our lives and our experiences, it becomes clearer and clearer that self-love and self-respect are crucial. And when we are judged by most of the world on how we look and found lacking, it's hard to feel love and respect for ourselves. I would like to ask everyone here now to introduce themselves, starting with Rose, since I already told you about her. Just a little, your name and whatever you want to say about yourself.
Well, I'm Ro, and I'm a children's librarian in New Jersey, and I'm 25 years old. I'm originally from Brooklyn, and I also write poetry and now hope to get more active in the movement, especially since the CR group.
My name is Roz Pulitzer, and I have been interested in how fat oppresses women in the society that we live in, and as a result, I facilitated the workshop at which Ro attended.
I'm Judy Grad. I'm a 51-year-old lawyer. I've been overeating for about 51 years.
I'm Deborah Plumer. I'm a student at Pratt Institute, where I'm involved with graphic design and printmaking, and overweight has always been an issue in my life.
I'm Carol Rosenthal. I'm a professor at Pratt Institute and a writer, and I'm 35 years old. I spent a very skinny childhood, not so skinny, I would say, and that's an understatement, adulthood. And I'm very angry about the physical standardization of beauty in our society.
Okay, so you know who we are. And of course, I'm Irene Yarrow. And I guess I should tell about myself a little bit. I was a skinny kid. When I got to be 21, I put on 30 pounds. And then I didn't like myself. I thought I was fat. For the next 10 years, I lost and regained that 30 pounds every 2 years. A couple of years ago, I said, a year ago, I said, this is the last time. It's too hard to lose it. And I'm on an all-out campaign right now to not gain it back again. However, I've gained 10 back. I think about it a lot. One of the things, we've been talking for a while before we went on the air, and one of the things that I was remarked particularly about Ro was that she's in that place of that women get to when they've been doing CR for a while. And as we were talking, every time the subject came up, her reaction was very strong and very emotional, and I related to it very much because I feel so strongly about being in CR groups. And I just think a good place to start would be to ask Ro to tell us a little bit more about the group, whatever you feel like saying.
Well, to start with, a few of us who started CR didn't even know what it was or needed the term consciousness-raising group explained. Basically, we all took a turn talking about our experience. And I'm always amazed that I learn that other women have had the same experience that I have, that I am not alone. When you just talk to other women and listen to them, you can just click and find out that it's not just your problem. I mentioned that I want to be more active in the movement in New York City and hopefully in New Jersey. But one of the things that held me back was my image of myself as fat, and that wouldn't be good PR for the movement. I mean, it would just be very horrible to see this fat woman picketing or something. And even at the group, I didn't talk about that too much until almost the last session. And when I did, sure enough, some of the women who are active had also had that in their heads, that it was a problem for them too. So I want to continue finding out all those things. And our group reformed, and women can start their own groups all over the place, not just about fat.
Okay, that's really interesting. Raza, just one more tell us about, and then we'll just get into general discussion. Just tell us about that workshop.
Well, the workshop was very well attended. There were about 50 women, which was, you know, quite a good bit for that conference. And there were a lot more women that would have liked to have attended, but just had all kinds of negative feelings about showing up there. They just couldn't deal with it. And word did get around, and there has been a need, as Rose found, for more CR groups, and I have a list of women. There were interesting things being said there at the, you know, at the workshop, how women felt about themselves, how they felt that they were discriminated against more as women, or how women just generally were discriminated more being fat than a man was in the society. It just turned out to sparkle off a great deal of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the women who did not attend that workshop for those very reasons of being afraid or their own negative image are now in our CR group.
Great.
That's great. That's great. I hardly know where to start. We covered so many areas before, but why not with the one that Carol got emotional about just in the introductions, the whole idea of the societal standardization of beauty. Do you want to tell us how you feel about that?
Oh, well, I had mentioned earlier that I was in a CR group in 1968 that practically broke up around the whole issue of what Irene called the fascism of physical standardization. Very nice alliteration there. I think that I don't know any women who really feel satisfied with their bodies. They feel like their thighs are too big, their calves are too muscular, their hips are too big, their stomachs are too big. Stomach's too big. Practically everybody thinks that. And where do we get these standards from if we're all so dissatisfied? You know, I don't know.
Well, they're all around us.
I mean,
on television and in the magazines and in the newspapers. I mean, we're presented with one. We decided before that we didn't think there was anything at all wrong with beauty, that we thought beauty was fine. But what isn't fine is that there are only certain kinds of looks that are called beauty. And that's not okay at all.
It seems to me that it's especially cruel in setting specific standards, which are poorly understood anyway. Because one woman will complain she's 2 inches too small here, and another woman with those dimensions is 2 inches too big. But it makes women, and I heard this in our conversation earlier, feel so rotten about themselves when they have absolutely nothing to be rotten about, feel rotten about. They are lovely, some of them. Really beautiful sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And are thought beautiful by the people they would like to attract, and yet they feel ugly.
Mm-hmm. That was right. Roz made a really interesting point about that.
Well, I think, you know, that our fashion field has been dominated by male fashion designers, and they have constructed the kind of clothing that would fit a woman who is flat-chested, narrow-hipped, and this is more like what a man looks like, not what a woman should look like or does look like. And I think that women not failing to fit into these kind of clothes or look well in these clothes just think of themselves as ugly, and it's not fair to mold us into something which we're not designed to look like.
Mm-hmm. Right, women aren't like that. Women are bigger and softer.
Right.
The whole difference between the male and the female body is that we're soft. We're soft in different places. And it's funny that the softer we get, the more unattractive we're seen to be. I was also thinking about that other point that you made. If you feel like going, do you feel like going into that about no matter how people feel about you, that what your feelings are about yourself?
Oh, right. That I yes, it's basically I know for myself. I'm 20 pounds overweight now. I have spent most of my childhood being very thin, underweight, and it's only in adulthood that I've had to tackle with fighting off fat and periods like now when I'm 20 pounds overweight. And when I'm like that, I cannot accept other people telling me that I look fine, that I'm not really fat because I'm tall and I can carry the 20 pounds, etc. It makes me very angry because I feel that they're not being honest with me. It's really my feelings about myself. And I remember even as a child, even though I know I was very thin, that I've never felt thin. I've always had a fat head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And specific feelings about, I mean,
that's right.
Not just that you think you're fat, but that you think fat is ugly.
That's right, and that fat is ugly, right.
Yeah. I think all women who, even those who aren't thin, who are thin, again, aren't satisfied with themselves because beauty is not any kind of real thing. It's a transient thing, first of all. It's in danger of disappearing, and it's meaningless.
Yeah. We were also talking about the other side of it, anorexia. Do I have the word right?
Yes. Right, anorexia nervosa.
Somebody want to talk about that? I mean, that's like somebody who knows more about it than I do.
I know people who have it, and I think that the symptoms are really the same, or the causes are really the same,
mm-hmm.
even though they're two opposite poles. And
what exactly is it for people who don't know?
Those people who have anorexia are those who don't eat, cause themselves to throw up and become very, very thin, to the point where they're emaciated.
Mm.
And I think they do so for the similar reasons that people become very overweight.
Which is what?
Possibly self-love, lack of self-love.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what's interesting about anorexia as opposed to people who are overweight is that they are literally becoming more and more fragile,
mm-hmm.
in a physical sense, which is what women are supposed to be.
Right.
And I think they enjoy that. Those people who have it, who I know, seem to really enjoy that. And they're really very conscious of the fact that they're very fragile, and they emphasize it with their clothing and just with the feeling that they're very satisfied with the way they look. They kind of like it. They
and
really
they can
do.
Kind of look awful. They can look undernourished and really ill.
They do look awful, but I don't think they think
die.
That they do.
No, I had a roommate who had this problem, and she invariably threw up her dinner. Mm. She ate it and threw it up
on
every
purpose,
day.
Or it just happened, or she forced herself to?
She would actually force herself to throw up, but the need to throw up and just the nausea and whatever accompanied it so that she felt the need to actually force herself to throw up, existed, you know, and it was a terror. She was very thin. But she was not happy with herself. She was not happy with her weight. She was flat-chested. She was not happy with the way she looked. She wished she, you know, could weigh more. She wished she could, you know.
So
I don't really know what, you know, this. I think so many dynamics involved there.
I think that they say that they do, and a part of them does really realize what's going on, but then another part of them, the more crucial part, really, it's useful being that thin. The same way being fat is useful in some way. They're getting what they want. They're fragile. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think that much of current analysis seems to relate to anorexia through the belief that the woman anorexic wants to stay a child. She doesn't want, this relates to what we said earlier, she doesn't want to acknowledge her womanliness, her breast development, or whatever. There's a classic analysis of this. It's called The Case of Ellen West by Freud's contemporary, the psychoanalyst Binswanger. And he analyzed it by saying that the anorexic did not want to take the world into herself. That eating was seen as part of the interaction of dynamics in the world, and so in this way the world was kept outside.
I think it's the same way with being very overweight. It's the exact same thing, and even to the point of wanting to relate it to still be a child, and not wanting to go out into the world.
But it's like it really does it keep people away from you. We, however, have one person here. when I started getting this show together, I expected that everyone was going to say, "I feel fine about being fat," and that has not turned out to be the case. And everyone should correct me if I'm wrong. But what the feelings that I've mostly gotten is that you don't, but you don't like not feeling good about it because that's what other people tell you. Because other people tell you it's no good. But we do have one person here, and that's Judy, and she's the heaviest, I think, person here, if that matters, and feels really good about it, and is a very attractive person, and I would like you just to give us that positive side of it.
Well, one of the things I want to say in response, Roz said something crucial. There are so many dynamics. There are probably hundreds of different reasons why different women and different men may be overweight. Any one woman may have a couple of dozen reasons. For anyone who's been fat as long as I've been fat, the reasons I have now are probably not the reasons I had when I was 5 or 6 or 10 years old or 15. But I've lived long enough to find out that a fat person will come on to some people as being undesirable, but isn't necessarily undesirable. There are people who love you anyway. I find I divide people into three groups. Those for whom the fat is an insuperable obstacle. That's a small group. Those who couldn't care less, that's a small group. And those for whom there's an initial hurdle that you have to go over by showing other aspects of your personality, showing your own self-feeling. And they will, after a while, ignore the fact that you are fat. And that's most of the people. So if you can get your own head straight, in my case, not straight enough to be thin, but straight enough to be happy.
You don't seem to need to be thin. I mean, I don't.
Well, there are practical disadvantages, like tourist seats on airplanes and certain kinds of tub chairs. And I have hypertension. I could get other ailments because it's really, you know, like a lot. But it no longer, at this point in my life, after having success in other areas, after having many valuable friendships and many beautiful relationships, it's not necessary for me to feel ugly, and I don't.
I know. It's very clear that you don't. I mean, I get a very clear picture of you seeing yourself as an attractive
person. And I look at some of the other people here, and I say, isn't she attractive? But she's complaining about how awful she looks.
The standardization of furniture, though, doesn't have to be any more than the standardization of beauty. I mean, that doesn't have to be a problem for any of us, anybody, for handicapped people who need different kinds of access, for fat people who need chairs. I'm sure even thinner people would be more comfortable in chairs that are not so, you know.
Right.
It doesn't have to be that way.
There are other practical things, too. There are jobs that I can't get because I don't meet insurance underwriting standards.
Mm-hmm.
That's even without the hypertension, just on the basis of weight alone. And that could be at a very high level. There are some companies where I can't be a vice president because the insurance company says I'm too heavy.
Mm-hmm. But in general, in your career, you have not found being fat an obstacle?
No.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking, one thing that happened earlier is just when I thought everyone had been using the word fat in general, but then at one point I said it and somebody responded by saying, "Ooh, I hate that word, I hate it." So I was wondering whether, you know, I think that might get us into some of the feelings about being fat. Does anybody want to talk about how they feel about that word, fat?
Oh, I hate it.
It's because being fat is such a joke on one level, and the word fat always seems to be used when it's in a joking way. Obese is a clinical term, and mm-hmm. fat is the joke word. And mm-hmm. those are the two ways that it's used. Not in a beautiful way, ever, mm-hmm. ever. It's so hard for me to relate to the fact that even in other places, overweight people are valued. They are considered beautiful. People tell me that, and I really cannot believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I know that this is a fact, and I've internalized this so completely that the things that I know intellectually are meaningless.
Does it go across the board then in your feelings about yourself? I mean, is that always uppermost in your mind, or are you able to forget?
Yes, it's uppermost in my mind, but I don't think it's. I think it's partially because of the weight, and partially because of other things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I use the weight.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead,
Carol.
Oh, I was just going to say, earlier you said everybody seemed to feel negative except for Judy, but I feel like it's a slightly more complex situation.
I always tend to do that. You know, anybody who knows me knows I tend to oversimplify some of my problems.
I wouldn't say that I feel negative about my weight. I'd say that I feel uncomfortable about it, and I think that the discomfort has to do with a perceived discrepancy between the way I sometimes feel in my body and the way the world seems to deal with me in my body. And, the social psychologists have this term for it. They talk about the difference between ascribed status and achieved status. And it's like, what you consider, this is sort of a misuse, I'm suddenly realizing. Okay, what you consider that you've earned the right for something,
mm-hmm.
and the way that you are seen by people in the world, when there's that kind of discrepancy, there's like a lot of unease in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of unease for me, even when I'm feeling great, and then I go to, for instance, during my vacation, I went to a hot spring. I hiked into the hot spring. I thought there'd be nobody there. There were about 30 people. You have to take off your clothes to get into the hot spring. Thank God I didn't have my glasses on, so I didn't know how I looked. But there were certainly some moments of discomfort there, you know,
mm-hmm.
when I thought of how I might look to other people. And one of my friends is a real freak on the whole subject of overweight. I mean, she keeps herself so thin that it's unbelievable. And not only that, but she was leaping from rock to rock with her stomach sucked in, you know, with an agility I didn't have.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that kind of thing that makes me very, very uncomfortable,
uh-huh.
even when I feel comfortable with myself. There are times when I don't feel comfortable with myself, too, and I don't want to X that out.
Then there are also direct obstacles. People on the street making fun of you and touching you and just being totally awful to the point where there's no way that you can ignore that and
mm-hmm.
and get past that and not let it affect you, not let it especially if you're in a fragile state,
mm-hmm.
even if you're not in a fragile state.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how anybody could possibly make it past that.
Mm-hmm. So if you were, say you were in a, your life was really good, you were felt very good about whatever your work was, and you had friends who you knew really valued
mm-hmm.
you as a person, and you were, say, in a relationship with a lover who also felt that you were a beautiful person and was very attracted to you, you might still carry around these feelings of not being beautiful.
I don't know.
Sure, if somebody...
I think I probably would.
Mm-hmm.
I think I probably would, and I know... If I'm walking down the street and somebody says something disgusting to me, depending upon my mood, I will react in different ways, but I'll always be hurt. It'll always just like zing right in there and hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a horrible thing, and I don't believe anybody. I don't believe it wouldn't hurt anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You can reach a point where you know that's his problem and
mm-hmm.
not yours.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time. It takes a strong sense of identity. It takes a certain amount of being loved. And maybe it takes years. But you do realize, eventually, that there's nothing wrong with you. Tim. Mm-hmm. Or her.
Mm-hmm. You have to... It's incredible.
Learn.
The struggle that you have to go up, that you have to come up against for that, is really incredible when you think about it. Why should you have to go through this enormous fighting of everything that you see, magazines and movies and everything. Everything is telling you what a sexual person looks like.
Right.
Overcome that is enormous. So if when you're 51, I mean, great, you're 51, and, you know, I can't believe that you've overcome that. But
through my bad times.
Why should you have to, you know? I mean...
Right, why should you have to waste all that time?
Yeah. You know, I just don't know. Understand it's difficult because, as far as I'm concerned, being loved never does it for me. Only being thin does it for me.
And that's what's so amazing. When I heard you saying that before, that doesn't matter.
No, because I don't believe a lover tells me the truth. I believe that they view me... attraction that is blind, you know?
What if a friend who you knew was not attracted to you...
I would suspect them.
You would think that they're attracted to you.
That's why I said I wasn't going to say anything to you, right?
Why do you think they're attracted to you if you think that you're not attractive? You must be attractive if there are all these people.
Because
who are
I just can't believe that to be a reality.
Yeah.
That when I'm overweight, when I consider that I don't look my best, that somebody can say I look fine. I can't believe that to be a reality.
As long as we're in the area of sex, I want to say our wonderful sentence that we came up before, and that will get us into the whole area of fat and sexuality, which we have at least two sides of to present, and that was the question, does sex replace spaghetti? And everybody had different feelings about it. And Margot Adler sitting in the engineering room and saying, no, 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 no. So we had some people here were saying, yes, sex does replace spaghetti, and others saying, no, it doesn't. Spaghetti's better. Anyway,
yeah,
that's
spaghetti's different.
But anyway.
And some people want both.
Well, what do you all think? I mean, what is it? Is it true that there is a basic assumption in society that fat people do not have a sexuality? I think I have let me just say right now that I think I should have had a disclaimer in the beginning of the show. So if at this point in the show you feel that you're being offended by the frank language that we're using in talking about sexuality, etc., tune away and come back. But it's sort of a gray area, so if you don't feel offended, stick around. And now, go on, everybody. And it's that the idea in society that fat women aren't sexual, that they're using food instead. So tell me, you know, about
just
that.
Just very simply, everything sexual that you see is involves a thin person. It involves a person who looks a certain way. So when you... I think that's when you don't feel sexual, it's because of that. Because why shouldn't you?
You don't feel you're being received sexually. In other words, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying that everything that involves sexuality involves people looking like perfect people.
Mm-hmm.
This idealized person that we were talking about. And I think we connect the two and think of ourselves as non-sexual beings. Mm-hmm. We're not worthy of having sex with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And the world, I think the world receives us that way, too.
How does that make you feel?
Yeah.
Does it make you feel non-sexual? Does it make you feel angry? Or makes you feel like telling them they're wrong?
It makes me want to just forget the whole issue. It makes me want to say, you know, some other time.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me definitely not want to deal with it,
mm-hmm.
as far as with another person, that is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Somebody else? Judy?
I recommend hope for you that what will happen to you, something will happen to you that happened to me a long time ago and was very good, and that's a man who wouldn't listen.
Mm-hmm.
And ignored all my resistance and loved me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I got used to the idea that I was lovable.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the rest of the world has to agree. A sexual relationship or a love relationship generally involves about two people.
Generally.
And you don't need a good housekeeping seal.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So that if you feel loving and sexual and somebody else feels that way about you, mm-hmm. that's enough.
I know whenever I'm attracted to a person, it is on the not in any way on the basis of what they look like. It's always on the basis of the vibrations that I get from them. It's always, and I'm talking about being attracted both sexually, romantically, and also just attracted to people as people. It's well, for me, it's aliveness. For other people, it may be other things, but it's not how they look. It's what I feel coming from them.
But if you're sensitive at all about street harassment or anything, I mean, if you haven't reached that wonderful place where Judy is, everything from Gilbert and Sullivan to studio birthday cards, it is a joke. Two fat people or one fat person and a thin person, and in any kind of relationship. The same, I said before, the same as old people are not supposed to be at all sexual, and that's absolutely ridiculous. But that's the picture that you get.
It's a vicious cycle also, because as you said, Judy, that for somebody to respond to you and consider and to love you, you have to love yourself, right? And how do you do that when everyone's telling you not to for all these reasons? So to come to the point that you came to, it took you a while too.
And five years of therapy.
And why should one have to go through this torture?
I have to say right now that an unprecedented thing has just happened. The engineer has walked out of the booth and into the studio because she wants to take part in this.
I can't resist. I mean, it's too close to home. First of all, I just wanted to say that sex has never equaled food in my life. I mean, it just never has. And I think one of the big myths in society, and one that I was really tortured with as a teenager, was this, well, when you fall in love, you know, you will, when you really have a relationship, well, that weight will just come right off, right? It will just come, or you won't need to eat. It'll just happen when you have a reason that's really good. And what they meant by a reason that's really good is when you fall in love with a man. That's what it meant. And it never was true for me. As a matter of fact, any time I was in a relationship, I always got fatter. As a matter of fact, well, because I was so nervous about the relationship, thing, right? You know? And it's